Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's get started. Bernstein and McKnight with you on Sports Radio 670, The Score, between now and 1 o'clock as we broadcast from the Hyundai Studios, presented by the Chicago and Northwest Indiana Hyundai dealers. Check out the Hyundai all-wheel drive SUVs. What we have is Kenny Dillingham, the Memphis offensive coordinator, at 940. Jeff Sullivan, senior editor of FanGraphs, with his weekly baseball hit at 10. Got a lot of stuff for the midday midway at 11. And then Joe Madden at noon with surprises along the way as well. 312-644-6767 is our number at WSCR The Score. Email us at Bernstein and McKnight at 670thescore.com. That's where you listen to us live streaming at 670thescore.com. Texting occasionally. It's 67011. We also got a text yesterday that somebody just not an unintended wayward text saying that the tractor needed a new battery.
Oh, we did?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't see this. You didn't alert me.
He sent us a text. It said that I think the tractor needs a new battery or some, and then there was some other word that I didn't understand. So I just texted him back. I said, thanks. We'll get right on that.
You think that's a euphemism, or you think he needs a diehard?
No, I think he was telling somebody who works on his farm to get a new tractor battery.
Okay, that makes more sense than someone saying, like, sweetheart, this tractor needs a new battery.
You know what I'm talking about. Come on,
hey.
Home. Or it could have been, like, for the Death Star that the tractor beam
needs a new battery. That could be it. I don't know that tractor beams ran on batteries when Obi-Wan got on that thing. I mean, he was clearly powering down some sort of actual reactor.
I don't know. It could have just been a big battery, right?
I read a lot of the books, Dan. I don't think any of that was battery. I think it was all cored into the kyber crystal.
People don't know that the Grand Moff Tarkin actually has 67011 in his phone. So he's
Peter Cushing just texting constantly.
He's trying to send something to somebody else, but it's completely understandable because he's a P1 and, you know, he loves the show.
Big time.
Loves our suit.
First time. Yeah, the whole deal. Yeah. Really enjoys the program.
Which is weird because, you know, during the workday, you know, he's worried maybe, you know, Vader comes in there
right,
and, you know,
right.
Force chokes him for listening to the score.
Also because he's dead, which right. It's tough to get him to call in anymore because of the whole he's dead.
It's headwinds then. Yes, you slow up a lot
exactly.
In that regard. So, yeah, the texting is at 67011. You text, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. Twitter is at Bernstein_MCK. He is at C1 McKnight. I am at Dan_Bernstein. Get on Facebook and enjoy the 670 The Score page. Just like it, and then you can enjoy all things score and then whatever that discussion is as it gets very strange. There is Facebook Live and watch 670thescore.com for a video feed. Hello, cameras. Hi, how's it going? That's directed by Brian Gertz. We have producers. They are Jay Zawoski.
We're real fired up to have Harry here.
We're fired up. We're fired up about this. The whole draft room's excited. The whole building's excited. We're really fired up about Roquan.
Are you in a good position for tomorrow and how you feel heading in?
We are. We're really fired up about tomorrow.
Everybody is very pumped up at the possibilities.
Or fired up, as you like.
I'm not going to say that anymore. We're excited.
And now it's all over.
Rick Camp.
You came into the arena wearing a Drew Bledsoe jersey. What was the significance of that outfit and that jersey to you as you came in to begin this series?
I got love for my man Drew Bledsoe. Even though we haven't talked, you know, I think he know who I am and I know who he is. So that's all that matters.
I love that man. That is some quality. That is A+ shade. That is quality stuff. That's trolling. That's backing it up with a game. Terry Rozier is fantastic.
To understand the
absolutely
subtext there,
fantastic.
Remember the exchange when Terry Rozier was putting it to Eric
Clowning Eric Bledsoe
of the Bucks. Eric Bledsoe said, when asked about Rozier, I don't know who that is. Well, you should, because it's the guy who's given you windburn the entire series.
You're supposed to guard him.
So in a brilliant turn, Rozier decides to wear a Drew Bledsoe Patriots jersey.
Huh?
And then twist it to say he knows who he is.
After slaying the dragon,
yep.
He brings the pelt of the dragon to the next round.
Yep.
It's like carrying the defeated enemy's helmet into your next battle. That is quality stuff.
Yeah, it's really good stuff. And in the back, doing what he does, the Mexicutioner Ray Diaz.
What's up, man?
Hey! This segment brought to you by Arlington International Racecourse, opening day at beautiful Arlington International Racecourse.
Hey, Quentin.
Hey, Quentin.
I just love how he does his first name.
The owner of the team.
Hey, Quentin.
Opening day at beautiful Arlington International Racecourse is Friday. Chicago's biggest Kentucky Derby party is Saturday. Mint juleps, hats, and horses.
Those are drinks.
There might be hats on the horses. Visit arlingtonpark.com to plan your day.
You fired up.
Hey! I'm coming to your house, man.
Yeah, come on. Come on down to the spot.
Got a 12-pack of Natty Bow.
Hey, Quentin.
That's an NFL owner.
My name is Otto. I like to get blotto.
We can't wait to get you.
The Cubs are weird when you start looking at some of the numbers.
Yeah, we were doing this a little bit before the show. First off, I don't know if you caught Len with Mully and Hanley earlier this morning, but I know that Joe, and we'll talk to him at noon, I know he was thrilled to get through a win like that without having to use Carl Edwards, without having to use Brandon Morrow for 4 out of 5 games. However, that's an ugly thing last night that you got out of with a W. Feels good, though. I mean, you have to win. You have to take those ball games. Managers love those.
Get out of there before they change the scoreboard on you.
Get the hell out of there.
Just make sure, okay, there it is. That's 27 outs. Let's go drink it.
But you're right. It's not just the way that game was. Not just the way that game needed to be managed. He had to get those guys in to finish that ball game, those relievers in, because of the workload he's already asked Carl Edwards and Brandon Morrow to carry. But you're right. It's not just who was scheduled to pitch and who had those innings that makes them weird to start this year.
No, I know. We'll have Jeff Sullivan at the top of the hour, but I was looking at his site here on FanGraphs, and I see that the Cubs' team earned run average is 3.33.
Fine.
Absolutely lovely.
Fine.
It's a wonderful number. And
nice.
The problem with that is that, and it ranks its fourth best right now in all of baseball, but you look at the expected fielder independent pitching of 4.21, and you wonder, is there some normalization to come, and have they been a little bit lucky? The fact is, they've walked too many guys.
That's just a matter of fact.
And they've per nine innings, there's 4.27 walks, and that's fifth worst.
So,
however, they're leaving a lot of those guys on base. They're stranding them. The Cubs have a 76.9 left on base percentage, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not really being hurt by it. And most importantly, they're not giving up home runs. The Cubs, per nine innings, are only giving up 0.79 homers, which is third best behind the Giants and Phillies in all of baseball.
These numbers, for better or worse, scream Tyler Chatwood to me. Tyler Chatwood has the highest walks per nine in baseball for qualified pitchers. Yes, it's incredibly early, but he's been doing that. He's also one of the top 10 guys, in a good way, for home runs allowed per nine innings. He's just not giving up the long ball. When we talk about XFIP, what that is a calculation of what should be happening to pitchers based on the balls in play, based on fly ball rates as well, not just the walks, the home runs and the strikeouts. It's a little bit more than that. It's what those fly ball rates should be, not just what they have been.
Now, it doesn't specifically take into account wind direction.
Nope.
And I do think that we mentioned that Wrigley Field wind blowing in.
CFIP would.
You can pitch to the park.
Yes.
You can pitch to conditions and say, I'm going to allow fly balls because they're just going to balloon into outs and that's fine. But what it also will now take into account that as the weather has turned, that fly balls are much more likely to be home runs now. And that's what that number might be telling you, that the Cubs have done a better job than their opponents, looking at their record, of taking advantage of in pitching into some of these conditions. Or it's just luck.
Could be some of that. But I think you mentioned ground ball rate overall for the pitching staff as well. Or if you didn't, we were talking about it earlier. The ground ball rate for the Cubs pitching staff on the whole has been pretty solid as well, right? I mean, weren't we looking at that number?
Cubs are second overall in baseball in ground ball rate. Diamondbacks pitchers induce 49.6%, and the Cubs are just in after at 48.1% ground ball.
You know what it's really hard to do with a ground ball? It's very tough to hit a ground ball for a home run. Very
except in television.
True.
Unless you have the two-dimensionality of in television baseball when you can bunt for a home run.
It's beautiful stuff, isn't mm-hmm. it? The weird one the other day was yesterday was the ball off Arenado's glove that goes yeah. into the stands yeah. for a ground rule double. The ball barely gets past base because of where Arenado played it, and you've got the two bags there.
He was bad.
Rough day for defense yesterday, it looked like.
Baez was bad. Arenado was bad. It was just a strange game overall.
Still trust those guys over the long haul defensively.
Yeah, I think so.
Good luck. That's, keep you up at night.
That was XFIP, right?
No this more was. Cybermetrics for you.
No, figuring stuff out. Overrated.
Yes, yes. No, it's shocking to see all of them going into yesterday. All the starters are in high fours for the Cubs.
Yep.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Happy May Day. I don't know if you are celebrating by dancing around a literal maypole, but I don't know exactly what we're supposed to do to celebrate it.
I don't. What are the origins of May Day? I don't know May Day all that well, to be honest with you. There is some sort of...
I think it's pagan.
There's a maypole, right?
I want to say it's pagan
with the streamers and stuff, and you dance around them to wrap it up, but I'm not really sure what the importance of it is.
It's a spring festival, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
And then it has also been co-opted by leftists.
Unions?
International Workers Day.
Okay.
It's like a communist party thing.
So really no way to root May Day back to my personal favorite, Cthulhu. There's no way to this is it's not quite his jive.
I don't think Cthulhu it would be in the mood.
Probably not a May
celebratory
entity.
Mood.
Yeah, that
right?
makes sense. Or really ever a celebratory. Okay.
Fine, I'll dance around the maypole.
Oh God, we're doing this again.
Yeah, the May Day celebration.
Begrudging Cthulhu is a pretty good character, actually.
And members of Begrudging Cthulhu. Fine! It's the Festival of Flora, the Roman goddess of flowers. It was held on April 27th during the Roman Republic era. The Walpurgis Night celebrations of the Germanic countries. And I don't know. Say happy May. I don't know. Do you rabbit, rabbit, rabbit on the first of every month? I don't know.
What?
For good luck?
What?
You say rabbit, rabbit, rabbit.
No, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Seriously? You say rabbit, rabbit, rabbit.
Heard
on the
that?
First? No, no, I haven't.
And I want to say it's like if it's the first words out of your mouth when you wake up.
On the first of any month?
On the first of any month, you'll have good luck for that month.
Well, that explains.
I don't know how it started. I do it with
explains
the kids.
A lot of things.
You know, the first of every month, I write three rabbits on the napkin and the lunch.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever said rabbit three times in a row until today.
Well, the other rabbit rule is if you're sitting around a campfire and the smoke is blowing in your face, if you say "I hate rabbits," the smoke will go in another direction.
There
interesting.
Is, I didn't know that either. I was told I was living up in Hayward for a little while.
That's
and
where I learned
we were
it.
Around campfires, and I am always the guy that has the smoke going into his face from the campfire.
Say "I hate
wherever
rabbits."
Wherever I sit, it follows me. There is, and I can't remember what it was, but apparently there is a Native American term for that guy.
Get away from him?
Yeah, it's like don't. There is a term for the guy who goes around campfires and always gets the crap blown into his face.
Wow.
Yes, I am that guy.
Is it being in Hayward, it would probably be an Ojibwe term.
I believe it was. I wish I could remember what it was. I've looked it up before and couldn't find it, and those friends are... I'm no longer in contact with those guys.
It probably sounds a lot like Namakagan.
I think it sounds a lot like Connor. Oh, you're here again.
Actually, that's the guy you'd want with you. If he's drawing the smoke into his face, it's better for you if he's the guy bedeviled
by
it, right?
That's a fair point.
This segment brought to you by Dell. During Small Business Month, Dell is offering up to 40% off select PCs with 8th-gen Intel Core processors. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with a small business technology advisor today. When we come back, we're going to talk football and talk about a new Bears wide receiver in Anthony Miller. Find out about the offense that he ran at Memphis and what his coordinator has to say about him as an NFL prospect. We'll be talking with Kenny Dillingham in just a couple minutes. Keep it here. You have the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
That highlight from ESPN, I don't know how much airtime they got, but we have seen pretty much all the highlights now of Anthony Miller and a guy who's going to be a fairly significant bear from what we can tell. This guy knows as much or more about him as a football player and as a guy than anybody out there. The offensive coordinator of Memphis, he's Kenny Dillingham. He's on Twitter at Kenny Dillingham and with us on the Score. What's happening, Kenny? How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm going to miss that soundbite of Ferguson to Miller this year, but y'all are going to hear that name a lot.
Why?
Because he is a dynamic playmaker, and he's going to give it everything he has every snap.
Reading the letter that Anthony wrote to NFL GMs on the Players Tribune, he starts out with a pretty emphatic statement. It says, "Dear NFL GMs, my name is Anthony Miller, and I think I'm the best wide receiver in the draft class." Did you guys at Memphis, did you guys know that he was penning this thing? Did you help him at all? Do you believe, I imagine, just like Anthony does, that he was the best wide receiver in that class?
I think nowadays with social media and all that stuff, that there's a lot of opportunities for things to be, you know, interpreted in a negative context. And the thing about Anthony that made him successful is he's competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who's competitive thinks they're the best, and that's what makes them great. And anybody who is great wants to be the best. So I think, you know, that letter is kind of who Anthony is and how he lives in terms of every day he believes he's not only the best player on the field, he's the best player in the country. And if he's not at that time, he's going to do everything in his power to become that. And I think that's just why he was a walk-on at Memphis, why he earned his way to be one of the best wide receivers in the draft. And, you know, the last wide receiver who was drafted in the second round out of Memphis was a guy named Isaac Bruce, and he worked out pretty well.
How did it happen? Take us through it, because this guy walks on, and then he redshirts for 2 years. And at some point, you have to be looking at practice film or something, or there's flash moments where, as coaches, you have to say, look, maybe this kid's better than we think he is, and maybe he deserves some more important reps, or we're going to move him up. What's the process by which you begin to understand that you've got something more than you thought you had?
Well, it first started off, I wasn't there when Anthony was originally brought in and walked on, but the day that myself, Coach Norvell, and our new staff stepped on campus at the University of Memphis, there was just something about Anthony that stood out, and he was the type of guy that it doesn't matter if we're in practice, it doesn't matter what drill we're in, he's going to give it 110%. And he was already given, you know, God-given abilities that he just had to make work. And the thing that he did every day was we'd have to slow him down at practice. We'd have to say, hey, don't block the kid into the cooler, all right? It's Wednesday, right? We want to keep you healthy. Like that. But that is his mentality, is every snap he's going to impose his will to the maximum of his ability, every play, every day, and everything he does his entire life. And that's a testament to his parents and how he was raised.
That's great. Not Wednesday. Friday, maybe you can block the guy into the cooler, but not Wednesday.
Yeah. And that's the thing about Anthony, but that's what you love about him, and that's what makes him great, is that mindset that it doesn't matter what day of the week it is, he's going to give it everything he has. And he is the testament of, you know, if you could put on the film and show a freshman or show a young guy what practice is supposed to look like, you put on his film and you show it, and then you show the carryover to the Saturdays or now Sundays, hopefully, and you can see the carryover in Anthony's game. But that's what makes him great, is just his passion for the game, his passion to be great, his passion to want to be the best.
Kenny, you guys had an interesting schedule this last season with the game against UCF canceled and then made up a loss there and then a ridiculous 2-overtime game to end the season or prior to your bowl game. And Anthony Miller goes off for 14 catches, 195, and 3 scores. Seemed to rise to the occasion in some of the biggest games that you guys had. What makes him do that? What kind of schemes did you use to get him open against such a good UCF defense? And what was it that he was able to do in the red zone and make sure that those touchdowns were happening for you guys?
Well, the thing for Anthony is he's extremely strong and extremely explosive. I've never been around a guy as strong as explosive in my life. And for him is when you get in the red zone, when the field shrinks, he's a guy that he's hard to press because he's so powerful. And I feel like in the red zone was where he really got to use his strength. And you really don't hear that a lot from guys who aren't 6'4", that, you know, they're great in the red zone. But how strong and Anthony's strength when we got down in those situations, you know, are an issue for teams to come up and press him. And then you combine that with his with just who he is as an aggressive personality, alpha male. And those are, that's a good combination down in the red zone. And obviously everybody knows what he can do with the ball in his hands, and how we tried to use him was we tried to get him in one-on-one matchups and say win. And that's kind of what our offense is. It's an offense built for playmakers. And if you're a playmaker and you can win a one-on-one, we're going to get you a one-on-one. And that's what we tried to find for Anthony every week is how can we get him a one-on-one, whether that was in the box kind of as an H-back, whether it was in the slot, whether it was out wide. He's a versatile playmaker, and it was our job to find a way to get him a one-on-one. And then at that point, it's on him to win, and he did that a lot for us.
Is there a route or a route combo that he liked running most to get those one-on-ones? Like, what is his go-to, you know, down against it, you know, behind the chains, that kind of thing? You guys know that Anthony can run this, and you got a pretty good chance of getting him open for a first.
I think he's a guy who can stretch the field vertically, home run post, and double cuts. He's so explosive that when he gets on a defender's heels and he cuts to the post and then breaks down again, that explosive and that power that he has, I feel like he's really hard to stop on vertical routes, home run post, than any sort of double move. He just has that. Some people have it, some people don't. He has that natural ability to stick and change directions quickly and comfortably. And I feel like those were, you saw that in the UCF game. We ran a post corner or a post and go to the field for a 65, 70-yard touchdown to him. And he just has that ability to get in and out of his breaks because he's so explosive and powerful.
Talking to Memphis offensive coordinator Kenny Dillingham of the Bernstein and McKnight Show on Sports Radio 670, the score middays 9-1. First of all, does he have the whole route tree? Is this a guy who's going to be able right now, stepping into the NFL, to get the full playbook? And how is the terminology that you used, how close to NFL verbiage is it, both in style and amount of words?
Well, we're a pro-style offense that goes fast. So obviously every offense is going to have different words. But in terms of what we ran here, there's not going to be much change in terms of he's having to read one high or two high to determine his route. He's having to read soft coverage, squat coverage to determine his route. In terms of where his alignment and splits are supposed to be based off the play, we're extremely detailed in all those things. So I don't think it's going to be a learning curve in terms of stuff he hasn't necessarily done. I just think, you know, for everybody coming in, you got to learn a new language. And it'd just be like you going out there and learning Chinese. Or me going out there and learning Russian. You know, it takes time. But once you convert it, once you understand it, I think he'll be extremely comfortable. And the one thing about him is he's going to do everything he can to get on that football field and make an impact.
I'm glad you mentioned press coverage, too, because my experience around rookie wide receivers of all talent levels is that a lot of these guys were used to free releases in college, and they would come into a game knowing that their struggle wasn't necessarily going to be at the line of scrimmage. And the real wake-up call at this level comes from a guy standing directly across from you who is going to punch you in the mouth right at the snap. And the hand fighting, the moves off the snap to be able to secure your own free release without a stack set, without a bunch set, without a pick, is where you start to see some of the growth really begin to occur. Is that something that you think he's a little more advanced at this stage of understanding leverage immediately post-snap at the line of scrimmage?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, he's going to play versus the best players in the world every day. So obviously, you know, getting his feet wet a little bit, there's going to be a transition phase where he's going to say, holy cow, these guys are really good. I mean, but that's for everybody. But the thing about Anthony is, like I kind of said earlier about him in the red zone, is he is so explosive and so strong. I feel like I don't want to compare him, but Steve Smith-ish mm-hmm. in terms of he's so powerful at the line of scrimmage. And he's so low to the ground, it's going to be difficult for people to really press him continually because I think he is just so powerful that he's not going to be a 5'11 wideout that tries to speed release every time. He's going to be a guy that comes off the ball and does a rush release and just comes right at you. And that's something that he can do because he's so powerful. So I think, yes, there's going to be a transition, obviously, to just the athlete. That's defending him every day and the film study behind that. But at the same time, he has every tool necessary to be extremely, extremely successful at getting off press.
Kenny, we've been talking to a couple college coaches over the last few days, recapping the Bears draft, and kind of my interest in the college game as relates to the pro game has been in the quarterback position. You know, we saw a bunch go in the first round. I know you guys will see teams like Houston and Navy and UCF, all kinds of different offensive systems, but how do you feel the college quarterbacks these days are prepared for the NFL at the elite level? You know, are we seeing a bigger and bigger divide between those top prospects and them playing in an NFL-style offense?
Well, I think the game is constantly evolving in college and in the NFL, and I think the term spread is used just because somebody's in the shotgun now.
Right.
And if you look at the NFL game, you know, Tom Brady takes most of the snaps out of the shotgun. So if you were to put Tom Brady in a Memphis Tiger uniform, you'd say, oh, he's running the spread. And I think that's where, you know, some people get, you know, they just kind of, they don't understand that it is very similar. And for us, you know, we're a pro-style offense that just plays fast at a two-minute tempo. So I think to answer your question, I do believe there's some offenses in college football that limit what the quarterback has to do. And I think the transition is strong. Are we one of them? No. We put a lot in our quarterback. And then at the same time, I think the NFL is learning, and they are kind of adapting to some of these players. You see a Nick Foles go win a Super Bowl, who he played in an air raid offense in college, and a great offense, and had great success. So I think the game is constantly evolving, not only at the college level, but at the NFL level. And I think you're going to see some more spread principles, some more run-pass options, which you've seen in the NFL the last few years, start to trickle in a little more. But yes, there is a little bit of a transition depending on the team that you're on.
Great stuff, Kenny. I know you said when we brought you in that you were going to miss hearing that highlight of your guy Anthony Miller. I imagine that there's going to be more of those on Bears airwaves that these fans are really excited about. And we appreciate you joining us today.
Oh, I appreciate you guys having me. You got a good one, and I know he's going to be a fan favorite because he's going to not only make some great plays, but he's going to be the guy that people see work every day out on that field and not take one play off.
Kenny, thank you.
You have a great day.
Kenny Dillingham, Memphis offensive coordinator. It's a great offensive coordinator name.
It is,
too, isn't it?
It is. Kenny Dillingham.
Like, if you meet somebody named Kenny Dillingham, you presume they're probably an offensive coordinator.
I love to. I'm glad I asked about, you know, the college
or like
game and offensive game.
A double-A fourth outfielder.
Kenny Dillingham. Yeah, I could see that, too.
Right.
You ask him about the spread out just because we're in a shotgun, we're running spread here at Memphis. I love his pushback on all that stuff. That's really, it's very OC coachy.
Don't block him into the cooler. It's Wednesday.
Did you, when he talked about Anthony Miller and his using his strength in the red zone the way he does at 5'11", I've watched some highlights, and I know it's been thrown around, and he even said it at the end of the interview here, Steve Smith. But
Antonio Brown?
As soon as he started talking about using that strength down there, that's the first guy I thought of.
Emmanuel Sanders, I've heard, too.
No idea if he can do it to that level, but, yeah, it's that kind of skill set.
Okay, now that we're sufficiently excited, we can...
yeah, I'm all peaked.
Yeah, let's talk some baseball. We're going to do that with Jeff Sullivan after a brief break on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.